Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, exploring the issues that impact our community, providing an in-depth analysis of the latest national discussion, and hitting the issues hard in a thoughtful, passionate, and provocative way. We have another thought-provoking show for you this morning. I am really excited today. All of Radio 1's stations across the country, 53 in all, which of course includes Praise 100.9 and 92.7, and our sister station, Old School 105.3, is participating in the Back to School with the History Makers program. The program, which is backed and touted by Secretary of Education in the Obama administration, Arne Duncan, is celebrating its fifth year and features prominent African Americans in all sectors of our society, including business, education, sports, entertainment, the medical field, and a bevy of others. This week, I had an opportunity to interview two of the history makers who are having a significant impact in our community, especially here in North Carolina. You want to know who these history makers are? Find out now on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
This is Ron Holland, host of Community Voices, and on the line with me today for the fifth annual Back to School with the History Makers program is Mr. Lenny Springs. Mr. Springs, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's good to talk to you.
Absolutely. You have the distinction of being a bank executive, chairman of the South Carolina Human Affairs Commission, founder of North Carolina's 100 Black Men of America, and past president of Voorhees College's National Alumni, and a bevy of other honors. Talk to me about why you've chosen to participate in the fifth annual Back to School with the History Makers program.
Well, let me say it's an honor to be recognized as a history maker. As you know, the History Makers was started in 1999 by Juliana Richardson. Mm-hmm. And the whole purpose of the organization is to start an archives of African Americans and the achievement that African Americans have made. So certainly I am honored just to be inducted in the History Makers Society. I was inducted in 2005. Mm-hmm. and ever since then have been involved with the History Makers, particularly as it relates to the Back to School program. Mm-hmm. The Back to School program was actually started in 2010 by Secretary Arne Duncan,
yes,
who is the Secretary of the Department of Education, whom I just happened to be employed as a senior advisor there in the Obama administration. So. Mm-hmm. It's an honor for me just to get involved in the Back to School
program. Right. What do you think the impact of the History Makers program is having on our community?
Well, you know, I would like to think that it's having a positive impact on our community. You know, the thing about it is when kids see positive images, mm-hmm, they think positive.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we say in the 100 Black Men of America is, what they see is what they will be.
That's exactly right.
Think about it. What they see is what they will be. So, you know, if they see positive African-American people doing positive things, then they think positive and want to do positive things and make a contribution to the society. So, you know, it has a tremendous impact. I have participated in Back to School every year, and every time I go into the schools, it amazes me to see some of these young people who have never seen an African-American man wear a suit and tie.
Yeah.
And in fact, the first time I went, one of the young men said, "Oh, you're a preacher, aren't you?" And I said, "No." And it occurred to me that he has only seen a preacher that wear a suit and tie.
Wow.
So the other thing is this. You know, these kids see things on television and there's negative things, and they see things that take place on TV, and they must understand That's just television.
Absolutely. One of the issues that I've been grappling with is the nexus between what is happening academically in our schools, as opposed to what's going on with the hip-hop culture, reality television, and the bevy of external environmental forces that plague our community, and it filters into the language, our interactions, and how we approach education. Have you explored the deeper connections this thing is having on our community? What's your assessment?
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. You know, I'm not against rap music. I'm against some of the language in rap music.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with rap as long as it's clean. It represents a positive thing that they're rapping about. I have a problem with the language. And that has an impact on education.
Yeah.
First of all, we must tell our young people that they can be more than a rapper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They can be a scientist.
That's right.
They can be a doctor. They can be a lawyer. They could be a politician. Even more so, they can be president of the United States of America.
That's absolutely right.
So it's imperative that young people see positive role models. And I would like to think that I'm a positive role model. I certainly don't put myself up on a pedestal and look down on nobody, but, you know, I have attempted to do positive things in my life.
Yeah. In almost every academic metrics, African-American students are lagging behind other communities, and this is especially true in the areas of reading, math, and science. What do you attribute the huge gaps in academics between the African-American community and students of other communities?
Well, you know, that's a good question. If you look at the STEM courses, and that's one of the things that we're concerned about in Washington, D.C., in the Department of Education, that's one of the things that my boss, Secretary Duncan, is concerned about. You know, how do we get more minority students involved in STEM courses, the science, the technology, the math, the engineering? One of the things I think is, you know, some of these kids have never heard anyone encourage them to go into STEM courses and in STEM curriculum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I know when I was in high school, no one ever talked to me about STEM. No one ever talked to me about math, engineering. You know, I had to figure it out for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that's one of the reasons that we're seeing a wide gap. Students are not being counseled. Students are not being educated to some degree about STEM courses. So, you know, we must do a better job, not only in high school. In fact, once they get to high school, it's too late. It's much, much too late.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We must start with kids when they're in elementary school.
Right, right.
Elementary school. You know, the fact of the matter is we live in a technology society. Like it or not, technology is evolving. It's changing every day. Look at what happened last week with the announcement of Microsoft,
yeah,
the i6 phone, i6 watch, and guess what? 6 months from now, that will be obsolete.
That's absolutely right, and unfortunately, again, technologically, you know, there is that gap, and particularly when you consider the digital divide in our country, you know, parts of our country, particularly in rural areas, it is very difficult to get internet access.
Absolutely. You know, I'm from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
My mom still lives on the home place, and when I go home, it's difficult for me to have access to the internet.
Yeah.
Unless I carry a personal hotspot with me, I can't get on. So we must continue to embed in the minds of young African Americans that they can be somebody in life.
Absolutely.
That they can be better than me, because many times I have young men say to me, "Mr. Springs, I want to be just like you." I said, "Nope, no, you don't. You want to be better than me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You want to be much, much better than me," because they can. the opportunities that they have now is just enormous.
Yeah, and we have just about a couple of minutes left. I do want to revisit this question. I've had several conversations about the demarcation of today's television programs and that of the 80s and 90s. And you remember the programs of the 80s, like A Different World, promoted and bolstered academic excellence. And it appears today that television producers are averse to these kinds of programs. And it's frustrating. Do you think it's a function of what society wants, or is there an effort to undermine the notion of excellence in this country?
I think it's a combination of both, to tell you the truth. You're absolutely right. If you look at The Cosby Show and A Different World, back in the 70s and 80s, it was a positive show. Well, unfortunately, that doesn't sell media anymore. We're in a society now where if it's not controversial, if you will, then it's difficult to get advertised and to pay for those shows. That's unfortunate. I don't even look at some of the reality shows. I refuse to look at them because they're disrespectful to the African-American community, particularly African-American women. You know, if you look at some of these reality shows that feature African-American women, it's downgrading to our women. But, you know, that's what some of our people in the community like.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunately, I don't like it, and it's a major problem.
Yeah. And let's circle back. What will you be sharing with the children during your presentation with the History Makers program?
Well, the subject for this year is commit. We're asking these kids to commit to excellence in education. We're asking them to commit to be good students from a standpoint of being obedient to their parents. We're asking them to commit to stay in school. We're asking them to commit to be an overall better person,
right.
An overall better person. So that's what I'm going to be talking to them about.
Yes.
Commitment. Commit yourself. Commit yourself to education.
Right.
Commit yourself to achievement. Commit yourself to accomplishments. And if we can get that point across this year back to school, then I think we will have a very good impact.
Absolutely. Bank executive, chairman of the South Carolina Human Affairs Commission, founder of the North Carolina's 100 Black Men of America, Lenny Springs. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
All right. I was thrilled to talk with Mr. Lenny Springs. His passion for education and desire to see our young people excel in education and embrace hard work and develop a meaningful appreciation for who they are, regardless of circumstance, is profoundly important. My next interview was with Ms. Mary C. Curtis. I especially enjoyed this interview because we have in common a passion for my first love, news reporting and journalism. Take a listen. On the line with me today for the 5th annual Back to School with the History Makers program is Ms. Mary C. Curtis. Ms. Curtis, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you. It's an honor.
Absolutely. You are quite distinguished. Your resume is quite extensive, so I won't mention everything that you've accomplished, but I do want the listeners to know that your background in news and writing includes the paper of record, the New York Times,
yes,
and the Beltway's Bible of News, the Washington Post.
Yeah, that's my current connection. Actually put a story out yesterday on a letter that some black women's groups had sent to Roger Goodell and the NFL that there are no women of color on their advisory committee on domestic violence, and that might be an oversight. So right in the mix of things.
Right. Well, you've done some work as well for the Charlotte Observer.
Yes, I was a columnist there. And right now you can see me every Wednesday morning on WCCB Rising, giving my point of view on what's going on in the political landscape here. We have a lot going on. We had the president here not too long ago with the American Legion, and I was there as well. So, yeah, it's a pretty exciting time. It was certainly not a slow news summer.
So you bring some journalistic heft to the 5th Annual Back to School with the History Makers program. Talk a little bit about why you've chosen to participate in the History Makers program.
Well, I think it's an incredible program because, first of all, it's great to get back to students, to be around young people. It's a lot of fun, and to tell you the truth, I get as much energy from them as they can get experience, expertise, whatever you want to call it, from me. Mm-hmm. And I go because I know how much mentors meant to me growing up.
Yeah.
Whenever I go to speak to schools, and I work with Freedom Schools and a lot of other programs, they always have these questions. Oh, you meet the president or first lady, and you must be this or that. And I tell them, you know what? I grew up in West Baltimore, in an area you might have seen on the wire, mm-hmm. In a nice working-class family, 5 kids, 2 parents, a boarder, 1 bathroom. And we didn't have a lot of money, but you know what? My mom took me for my library card. I got to know the world through books. I had so many people supporting me along the way, the nuns I had in grade school, and other people who saw something in me. And everyone has something to offer, so I want to tell them that. I want to tell them about my growing up and how you might have challenges in some areas,
but
at the same time, you have people who want to see that potential and to get those gifts, and you do have something to offer your family and offer the world, really.
Absolutely. Now, being featured as a prominent figure in the History Makers program and given your background, I'm sure you mulled over a host of other programs that will benefit our community. If there is a measurable impact of the History Makers program, what will be the tangible example 20 years from now that suggests or gauges whether the program is actually a success?
Well, you will see the young people we talk to making their own mark in a variety of fields. I know I'm going to be sharing the day with the banker, Lenny Springs, and also with a wonderful ballerina and now head of the North Carolina or the Charlotte Ballet Dance School, the principal, Aisha McMillan, who, oddly enough, I wrote about on the cover of the Charlotte Observer on a story that featured her story and the challenges of being a black ballerina.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the success of this will be all the young people who grow up to also be responsible to do things for the community and also to reach back.
Right,
and
yeah.
That will be the success. And all the I'm involved in many programs, and it seems like the programs like the Y Readers and the Freedom School, they are ones that encourage young people and see something in all the young people. And so that's the takeaway. If these folks can commit to their educations, commit to reading and writing, being able to express themselves. And also, I'm probably going to be talking a little bit about the challenges they may have, because there are still challenges. It is not an easy path. And you know, life isn't fair.
And
they know that at a young age. But
true.
You know what? You work with what you have, and you can achieve. And some folks that have a lot more growing up, they have a little bit of easier time of it, but they may not be able to reach their goal because they don't have that commitment.
Yeah. And, you know, interestingly, school districts across the country are spending huge amounts of money per pupil to address the educational needs, particularly in poorer communities. And catching up still proves to be a major challenge. Is there something that we're missing as a community?
Well, I think we have to make sure that all the people who interact with our young people see the potentials and gifts of each and every one.
Yeah.
And I think for the most part they do, but we have to keep reminding folks of that. Also, when I was growing up, you had all the different things, art and music and all of these things, and sometimes those things are cut from schools. But I want to tell you, I may not have grown up to be a wonderful ballerina like Aisha or a musical comedy star, but all those things that I was exposed to, my teacher who took me to an opera, or my mom who took me to see the plays and, you know, got the little student tickets to things, that really did expand my approach to what is in this great big world of ours.
Right.
And we when we say, oh, it's just important for certain kids to have reading or math or this or that, they need to have everything, because, you know, sometimes kids who may not, their entry into their studies might be art.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the way they express themselves, or sports, or these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we have to keep that in mind when we're looking at that. And also, I love the fact when there's teacher's assistants in the class helping the teachers, because you want to make sure that nobody falls through the cracks.
Yeah. And as a writer, an editor, a journalist, you're probably familiar with the difficult challenges many children are having in the areas of reading and writing. Give me your assessment of the tools school districts are using to make those improvements, and what role do parents play in making sure that reading and writing is an integral part of their learning experience?
Well, different kids learn in different ways.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure we are dealing with those different approaches. And I have to say, you know, when I was younger, we didn't have all of the different video games and things like that to distract
right.
us. And yes, they are good in some ways, but sometimes just sitting there at the end of the day with a book, with your child, reading to your child. I remember looking at Romper Room and things on television.
Yes.
And the kids have Sesame Street. I had that with my son,
mm-hmm,
who's
mm-hmm.
grown now. And I think that parents really do need to commit to reading with their kids,
yeah.
and just explaining things, taking quiet walks. And when they ask the questions about the sky or the moon or animals or the plants, that these are things that, you know, we have such a fast-paced lifestyle now.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you need to have those quiet moments to think and react and respond to your child's curiosity and not overschedule them with something every minute of the day, because sometimes they just need to daydream
that's exactly
and have
right.
their ideas. And
yeah.
So I think maybe, you know, it was a little bit, it wasn't, you know, I didn't have a whole bunch of email to deal with when I was a kid. You know, I didn't have all of these, you know, texting and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think we can't lose that. Operation School Bell, another program I'm involved in, they give the kids a book of their very own. And I tell you, there's nothing that beats that old-fashioned book. I still remember my mom taking me for my library card when I was 3 years old.
Mm, wow. If you were commissioned to write the standard of academic excellence for students to follow, what would be the first and second on that list?
Oh, my goodness. You're giving me the hard questions. I can't solve the problems of the school system that they've had in a while. I cannot. But there is nothing, this is one of the reasons I'm involved with History Makers, there is nothing that beats having an authority figure, a parent, a teacher, who really cares.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because kids know, even when they're little, they know when someone has his or her best interest at heart.
Right.
And they are there to make that commitment.
Yeah.
And leave no child behind. You've heard that expression. And I think that is the most important thing in the world. So I don't have an unlimited budget or any of those things. But, you know, I certainly would make sure that we had enough staffing and enough materials so one-on-one every child can get that connection.
Absolutely. Newspaper editor, news correspondent, and features writer, Nieman Award winner from Harvard University and National Association of Black Journalists Hall of Famer, Miss Mary C. Curtis.
I'm just that little girl from West Baltimore.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. And just everybody in the community, even if you don't have a child, the community's children are your own children.
Absolutely.
This is our future, you know?
Absolutely. Thank you again.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
I was also thrilled to talk with Miss Mary C. Curtis. Without question, her participation in the 5th annual Back to School with the History Makers program will provide our young people a towering example of how hard work, dedication, and an unmovable desire towards success, how all of this will certainly pay off. We're going to transition into the national discussion that is garnering so much attention in the headlines, and that, of course, is our nation's efforts to stop the black mask terrorist group ISIS, or ISIL as some folks are calling them. Once again, President Obama addressed the nation this week after Congress voted to approve the president's measure to arm the Syrian rebels to fight against the terror group ISIS. The president ordered more special forces, of course, to provide aid to Iraqi and Kurdish soldiers. France, of course, is on board, as well as other nations, to help assist the United States in fighting against ISIS. And of course, as you know, in Australia, there was a huge roundup of potential ISIS terrorists, and they have been cracking down. And of course, we want to certainly keep an eye on this. You know, one of the interesting things, and I've said this last week, and I've been saying this for quite some time now, I did not want a blustering, chest-thumping president who acts with haste. I didn't want some arrogant, smug leader thumping his nose at the rest of the world, blindly leading us into some aimless campaign of death and maiming of our troops. I want someone who is going to think through the ramifications of war. Think through the ramifications of another conflict in another theater of war. I want someone who is going to mull over the options, develop a long-term strategy. And that's what we're getting from President Obama. And certainly many of his critics have suggested that he is being indecisive and unsure and not having the gumption to really go after this group. But isn't it interesting that the same folks that are criticizing the president are the same individuals that are not putting on the uniform and going across seas to participate in this kind of fight? They are not sacrificing their sons or daughters or nephews or nieces. They want to criticize the president for taking a sober look at how we engage this process. I wanted someone who's going to consider the consequences of a potential quagmire, because this conflict can take quite a long time, and consider the impact of our military families, and our economy. I want my president to give us a true assessment of a crisis, not a manufactured set of assumptions and circumstantial evidence that ultimately and needlessly cost American lives. And ultimately, folks, the American people want the Muslim nations to risk their lives, risk their necks for once. Where is Saudi Arabia in all of this? Where is Jordan? Where is Turkey? I heard an interesting analysis last week that suggested that one of the reasons why ISIS beheaded this British citizen was because Turkey, they wanted to influence Turkey, because apparently ISIS has a number of Turkish residents and they wanted to send a clear message to Turkey that their involvement or their partnership with the American people is going to result in the beheadings of Turkish citizens. But at some point, Turkey has got to stand up. Where are the other European nations? The American people are not bear this fight alone. ISIS has killed thousands of Muslims in both Iraq and Syria. They have brutalized and tortured hundreds of people, lining them up against ditches and shooting them down like dogs. Where are the Muslim nations? That's the question that we have. It is the Muslim countries that should be taking the lead in destroying ISIS. I know we have the capabilities. I know we have the resources. I know we have the wherewithal. I know we have the military might. But at some point, we are going to have to step back, not involve our soldiers on the ground, perhaps fighting the air campaign. But those folks who are potentially threatened by ISIS, who are in the region, they need to put some skin in the game. They need to sacrifice their lives, because ultimately ISIS poses a threat to them in the immediate, and we have to deal with it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I want to again thank Mr. Lenny Springs and Mary C. Curtis for their commitment and dedication to our community, our children, and for exemplifying dignity, integrity, and serving as examples of success. Next week, I'll be talking with ballerina Alicia McMillan. Ms. McMillan has an absolutely fascinating story, and I can't wait to bring that story to you. Now, I'm pleased to announce that my show is moving to a new time, and we're expanding our show to our sister station, Old School 105.3. Starting next week, Community Voices will be heard on Praise 100.9 and 92.7 on Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. and on our sister station, Old School 105.3, on Saturdays at 7 a.m. I am really excited, so stay tuned. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Today's show is also available on our Praise Charlotte website, as well as our Old School 105.3 website. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We will talk with you next week.